So, continuing with this bodhicitta, especially the relative bodhicitta, ultimate bodhicitta, which we talked earlier, for the beginners, you can only sort of contemplate, so to speak, which we talked earlier, just before the break. Contemplate and sort of get used to this idea. That's about all you can do. But that's not the really sort of the if you like the word authentic, it's not really authentic way of meditating on ultimate bodhicitta. Because actually, ultimate bodhicitta cannot be meditated. Meditation is fabrication, contrive. You create. So, and if you create and contrive and alter, then that's actually a contradiction to the ultimate truth. You cannot make it, you know, you cannot create. But having said that, since we need to discover the truth, we need to actualize the truth, and ultimate truth is what we need to realize, actualize, we somehow have to do something. So the only thing that we can do is what I said earlier, sort of contemplate. Now the relative bodhicitta, you are allowed to contrive. You can create, you can meditate. So this, but as I said earlier, even though it's a contriving, fabricating, the relative bodhicitta technique is designed so that it will lead you to non-contriving state. There's so many reasons for that. For instance, you know, before the break, I was talking about the limitless, all sentient beings. Just that alone is such a clever design to take you to the non-duality. Because concept called all. Right now, for people like you and me, all is so scary. Everyone, everybody invited to this party of Bodhisattva? Really? Everyone, including the Donald Trump? Really? There's no space? You know, all scares you. Concepts such as infinite, few is manageable right now. So already, mind training such as all sentient beings, you know, this is another reason. You know, earlier I gave you the reason why we need to have the concept such as all to create a grand vision. But this time it's a much more important reason. And much more important reason is concepts such as the infinite sentient beings takes you closer to the ultimate truth. So this is why the relative bodhicitta is really, really precious. It's like to get to the highway, you have to first take the, you know, small roads. That's so important. And relative bodhicitta is something that you can do. And there's even a suggestions here. And those suggestions are all something that you can handle. You know, like the ultimate bodhicitta, only intellectually, okay, everything is a dream, everything is imagination. But you know, if you walk this way, you will, you know, be blocked by this wall. And just telling yourself this is imagination is not going to help. It's solid, tough wall in front of you. A yogi, a great sublime being, can do it. But I think this is something that you, at the moment you may not understand. Anyway, just to finish it, yogi can do it because yogi is beyond solid, hard, wall, thick. All this delusion is gone. His own body, you know. So all these distinctions, all these dualistic distinctions are all transcended. He has transcended all of that. So that's why he can do it, but we cannot. Relative bodhicitta has lots of doable, how should I, user-friendly, so to speak, easy to do, comprehensible techniques, such as all sentient, everyone wants to be happy, just like me. I want to be happy, just like that. Everybody wants to be happy. May all be happy. May all not only be happy, but may they also gather the cause and condition for the happiness. Everybody don't want to suffer, just like me. May all be free from the suffering, and not only from the suffering, but the cause of the suffering. So this way, you accustom yourself, you habituate yourself through the love and compassion. And then there's so many techniques here, such as, you know, whichever technique actually works. For instance, beginning with someone you really care, like in the text, usually mother is used as a starting point. But, you know, in the modern world, sometimes children and the parents don't have that much of a, you know, closeness. So probably this technique for some people may not work. But others, I have seen people who go crazy with their pet dog. That's all they think of. And they really care, this pet dog. So you can begin with that pet dog, this dog, or, you know, the sweet dog, the saliva drooling, you know, like, you know, looking at you, you talk to this dog and sort of understand this dog. He understands you, wags his tail, and then poor dog, I forgot to feed him, all these things. And then you can slowly switch this to maybe those who has similar color hair. Sort of peach color. You know, because there's a resemblance, isn't it? So you can switch, you know, poor man, you know. He has to put up with all this, so on and so forth. So this is how you can, you know, this is all mind training. It's all method, technique. You can use whatever. And and then also there's a very popular, famous Tonglen. Breathe out, all the good things goes out. Breathe in, all the bad things comes in. It's a very, very important method. You basically breathe in all the suffering and the cause of the suffering of the whole sentient beings. You breathe out all your merit, blessing, and virtue. Give it to others. Another technique, mind training. And that alone, you know, Dajin Jebi Changchukisam is so, it's a really important technique. I mean, I can go on and on talk about it. For instance, one of the reasons why we suffer so much, why we really suffer so much is we always think about ourselves all the time, cherishing self. That's all we think of. So now we are switching it. Others are more important than one. Then there are some questions like this sometimes. When people, oh, if I do this, does it really work? Like bad things will come to me? All my good things will go out? I have been asked this. Will it really, you know, happen like that? Depending on who's asking this question. If you are a beginner, I will say it's a mind training. I'm not saying that it won't come true, but I will say it's a mind training. Once you are slightly more matured in the relative bodhicitta, I will say, yes, all the bad things will come to you and all the good things will go to you. So what? Isn't that your plan? Isn't that what you are signed up for? What happened to your big vision? If you can't handle this, this is what I would say. So this is the attitude you have to have. And don't forget, good things go out, bad things come in, all are illusion. See, always go back to that ultimate bodhicitta. So why worry? So again and again, combining the relative bodhicitta and ultimate bodhicitta. Exchanging oneself with others. And this is something I will emphasize. And this is so important. You must hear this. So important. What did I tell you yesterday? In Buddhism, wisdom, most important. Morality, ethic, secondary, remember? When you find, when you see a beautiful object, when you have desire to this beautiful object, your mind training should be like this. Instead of looking down at this desire, oh, I'm a Buddhist, How can I have this desire? Desire is not good. It's sinful. It's sacrilegious. It's dirty. It's, you know, any kind of desire. A desire for a nice handbag. Desire for good food. Sexual desire. When this kind of desire happens, instead of condemning and looking down, you think, may all the sentient beings' desire come to me. I'm not even teaching the Tantra here. This is a Mahayana teachings. May all the sentient beings' desire come to me. I'm not saying desire is bad or good or anything. I'm not making any kind of distinctions. I'm asking you to think, may all the desire of the sentient beings come to you, come to me. May all the sentient beings be free from the anxiety and the paranoia and the hope and the fear that is generated by desire. May it come to me. So you are not really, see, this is how Mahayana people use the emotion as the path. Same thing with the anger, same thing with the jealousy. Not condemning the emotion. Instead, taking advantage of that emotion to let all the emotions of the others also come to you. Mind training. Similarly, if you have a virtuous thoughts, generosity, if you are, you know, wholesome at times, if you feel good, immediately give it to others. Again, every day, few minutes, if you can sort of get used to this. As Chandradipa said, there's nothing on this earth that will not become easier if you are accustomed to. You know, right now it sounds impossible to even fathom, like, oh, all the bad come to me and all the good goes out. You will not fathom this. This is something that you can do it. But it is doable. If you can, I'm sure, you know, 8 o'clock in the morning, you know, for the beginners, if you do this for 5 minutes, 3 minutes, and then you go out, you will lose all your temper, fight with this person, desire with that person. I'm sure this will happen in the beginning. That should not be the reason to discontinue the path. You know this. You know, when you ride bicycle first time, when you learn how to drive first time, how many times you make mistake? You have bruised yourself many times, but you didn't sort of, first time you fall from the bicycle, you didn't stop. You still continued. And that's why a lot of you know how to ride bicycle. I don't. And I'm so fascinated when people drive. It's amazing the awareness and the skill they have. They look front, they look bag, they move this, they drive this, and now they even text and they talk. How do these people, they do this? And their cars coming towards you, car from the behind, dogs, cows, if it is in India. But if you practice it, and this is much easier than driving car, actually. It's economical. It doesn't cost you anything. And it gives you all the reward of freedom. Before lunch break, I think I will let you ask some questions. Probably you have some questions.
Rinpoche, I struggle a lot with discipline. And sometimes I punish myself because I'm not waking up early and doing my practice. And sometimes I question how should I embrace discipline?
Okay, very good. Do it always. Don't aim big discipline. Never aim big discipline, especially if you're a beginner. Something small, but you have to do this. Something so small, don't do it long, and don't do it too many times, but consistency. Like meditation, don't do it like an hour of meditation if you are a beginner. Even 10 minutes is a bit too long, 5 minutes. But every day, within 24 hours, I would suggest, do not confine yourself making, I will only meditate in the morning. Because that's, your space is too narrow. So you can discipline. Within 24 hours, I will do 5 minutes at 5 minutes. And Do not limit yourself thinking that I will only meditate in the living room or a bedroom. Do it anywhere, garden, bathroom, kitchen. When it happens, just let it happen there. Again, it's an art of getting used to. I think this is something you can train yourself. I mean, I don't have much discipline, but like when I'm in retreat, and generally to wake up in the morning, I put an alarm clock. After a while, like in the retreat situation, I get up sometimes like 5 seconds or 10 seconds before my alarm clock makes noise. You get used to it. Even your body gets used to this. This is something that you need to think, and not only meditation. Okay, discipline yourself reading a book, one half a page a day. You will finish. This is actually a little bit my advice coming from my own experience, I think I had this character of needing to do too many things in one time. Like I'm reading what am I reading right now? I'll tell you. I'm reading Wuthering Heights, Emily Bronte, right? So tough, my goodness, the English. Half a page every day. That's how I disciplined. Murakami, so good. But there, I need to discipline opposite way. Because he's so good, I just want to read more. So I said, 5 pages. And sometimes I just want to sneak the 6th page. He is so, you know Murakami? I think I have a karmic debt with him because actually his books, sometimes they are like, I'd be reading about 50 pages, like maybe like 10 days I'd be reading and still somebody's making a sandwich or waiting for a cat to come back. But I don't know, somehow he writes so well, I want to read. So that's what I do. I read, I'm reading Emily Bronte's Wuthering Heights, Murakami's, what is it called? This, colorless, that, I have it here. Anyway, it begins with a colorless. And I'm reading also do you know a guy called Sam Harris? Some of the Americans may know. He's very, very atheist. He's good, very good. Sam Harris. About ethic. It's a really good argument. And then on top of that, I discipline myself reading Vajrayogini's teachings in the Sakya tradition, every day, 1/2 page. And then 3 pages of Mahasandhi teachings, whatever it is. And I have to say, you know, after a few months, I feel very happy that, you know, a few books get read. This is how you have to do. I think you just end up, you know, like not really starting. Any other question?
Dear Rinpoche, I just want to tell you that I love you very much, and I'm sharing, I guess, everybody's feeling. And in the spirit of wisdom, I was wondering if you can help us by giving us the oral transmission of Manjushri.
Okay.
That will be very kind of you. Thank you.
Are you coming here tomorrow? Are you here tomorrow? Okay, I will do it tomorrow in the morning. Okay.
Rinpoche, yesterday you said about, well, nowadays many people is becoming interested in practicing meditation because all the information we have now from neuroscience and all these methods of mindfulness. But as you said, this is like a short reaching mm-hmm. way. So how would you suggest to people to share these kind of methods so the people that is just beginning to learn how to practice, that they have like a proper understanding on the mind understanding? Mm.
You know, actually, this is a Mahayana teaching. You can share whatever you know. You can actually, and of course, with the humility, you can always say, I may not have heard, you know, like Ananda, thus have I heard. Not like, this is what he said. So you can share. Yeah, and then argument. Argument is important. You know, sort of analysis. And I think it's a very good motivation. You should really try to give direction, especially those who are ready to listen, happy to listen. I'm not saying that you should go around knocking the, you know, neighbor's door and give pamphlets and tell them that you will save them, but you should, you know, those who are willing to sit and talk, you should talk about this. It's important. And by doing so, you are practicing the highest generosity, you know, generosity of materials, generosity of, you know, protection, food, but the highest generosity is the generosity of truth. So you should do that. Yes.
Rinpoche, I think in one of your books, you mentioned that to be a Buddhist, you must have the conviction that all emotions are painful. And I've been thinking about it, but I have not reached that conclusion. So if you can please explain that.
Yes. I know I have been also asked by many people, in fact, a lot, you know, because I think the term emotion is also, you know, what is meant by emotion in the different culture. I think creates a little bit of misunderstanding. And I have been also, there has been debate, like, why did I say all emotions are pain? Why not defiled emotions? Why not, you know, like negative emotions? But I went back to my own statement that all emotions are pain because according to Buddhism, you see, the word suffering is not a good word to translate word dukkha or dukmal. Because according to Buddhism, suffering, the quality of the suffering, when we talk about the quality of the suffering, we are not only talking about pain, you know, like pain is in pain, you know, like actually the big chunk of the suffering, the quality of the suffering is impermanence, the changing, the uncertainty. And all emotions are changing. Whether it's, you know, some people I know, especially in California, you get into trouble when you say all emotions are pain. Oh no, love, you know, the nice, you know, all this hugging and all of this. This is good, you know, this is not painful. But all this blissful hugging, whatever, this good, all this, you know, this devotion, compassion, all this that you and I have are changing, uncertainty. There's so much uncertainty. So therefore, it has a quality of suffering. And then, one more question before we take a break.
Yesterday you were talking about mind, no mind, mind is the luminosity. The three mind in this stanza is the same thing, mind is the same thing, refer to the same thing or not? And the second question.
Can you, wait. Can you repeat that again? Sorry.
Yesterday you were talking about the stanza, mind.
Mind is,
no
yes.
Mind is the luminosity. There's three mind here. They are same thing or not?
Well,
what's the definition here?
That is, yeah,
and
I know what
you. Second question is, you're talking about seemingly contradiction between relative truth and the ultimate truth. Is there any consistency behind?
Okay, those two questions are very big. We can do it after lunch. What do you think?
Okay.
Instead of answering, let's listen to this.